telling my family how Cheer's going. Oh yeah, we've got over 200 people. And they, didn't you just start in 2020? Yeah. Didn't you just compete for the first time last year? Yeah. Didn't you win? Yeah. It's hard to not think of it as a fluke, but it's not a fluke. It's, as Joe said, it's all the help we've had. It's mine and Joe's hard work day in, day out. Every day there's Cheer admin to do. Every day we do our day jobs, finish our day jobs and head straight to Cheer. It's a lot of time, work and energy. And we are very, very grateful for everyone that's kind of trusted us and believed in us.
What immediately comes to mind when you think of cheerleading? Is it perhaps women standing on the sideline of big sporting events with pom-poms whilst dancing and cheering on other proper athletes? Because that's certainly the impression I had when I was first asked to try the sport nearly 10 years ago, and how wrong I was. Competitive stunt-based cheerleading could not be further from that nowadays. It's fast, it's dangerous, it's jaw-dropping, and it's incredibly skillful. But it's also more than that. It's a community, a place that brings people from all backgrounds together and connects them in such a way that many lifelong friendships are formed. Two people who know this very well are Joanna Hager and Grace Lowe, who are the directors of London Dynasty Cheer, as well as being athletes and coaches at the club. What began as a project in 2020 with an initial aim of bringing 23 athletes together, LDC has grown exponentially in the last 3 years. And the club now boasts in excess of 200 members, 5 competitive, 1 elite development and 2 recreational teams, and both national champs and grand champs victories under their belts. Over the course of this episode, you'll find out how Joe, Grace and everyone else at LDC managed to achieve this monumental feat in spite of a pandemic, as well as discovering just what it takes to be a cheerleader and why it is such a special sport.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Sports Spill. And I always say I'm excited for episodes, but this one I'm particularly excited about. It has a very personal feel for me. So those who have listened since the start or those who know me well will know that I was and now am again a cheerleader. Part of the reason I now am a cheerleader again is thanks to my two lovely guests and the wonderful club they run. And I'm delighted to welcome Joanna Hager and Grace Lowe, who are joint co-founders, directors, athletes, coaches, social sex, and pretty much everything else at London Dynasty Cheer. So first of all, Joe and Grace, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And thank you for such a nice intro.
I know, very interesting.
We do it all.
Yes, you do. So first of all, cheerleading is quite a unique sport. I think its profile is growing in this country, but I think there may be some listeners who still aren't entirely sure of what cheer is. So I'd love to hear it from yourselves, if you could describe what the sport of cheerleading actually involves.
So I always describe it to like friends and families who members who don't do cheer as kind of a mix of gymnastics, tumbling, dance. You have the non-tumble division now, which is great, but a good lead-in used to be like bring it on, throwing people up in the air is usually what I start with, and then people say, oh, do you get thrown up in the air, which I do get to say yes. And I think, yeah, it's just explaining that we also don't cheer for other people, at least not at LDC. There are obviously match and varsity teams that do that. There's also POM, which do have the pom-poms. But when for us, I just kind of help raise awareness that it's like, it's a hardcore sport, 2 minutes to 2 minutes 30 of fast intensity cardio. And yeah, covering all those elements and also mentioning kind of that it's like, in the Olympics, that how you judge gymnastics routine. So we get scored on how well we do those skills.
Yeah, I usually make it a bit more basic and just say, I throw people up in the air. We don't have pom-poms. That's pretty much what I give. But yeah, Bring It On was also a reference for me. But then now we have the cheer documentary, which helps. But yes, no pom-poms.
I normally preface it by saying I throw and catch the people as well, but you know.
Oh yeah.
That's good. I actually never mentioned the catching. But I do catch.
Yeah.
And for you both then, how did you get into cheerleading? I think that's one of the things I love about the sport, is that everybody's got a different story. There's almost like no set route to getting into cheer. I didn't get in until I was 18 and things like that. So for both of you, how did it come about?
So I started in school. I was 13 and my best friend in school wanted to do cheerleading. And I thought, no thanks. Had no interest in it, had never seen Bring It On, had never, all I thought of cheerleading was doing cartwheels at the side of a game with pom-poms. Think Grease and Sandy, that was my idea of cheerleading. But as a good friend, I went along to help, to support. I had a broken wrist at the time, so I couldn't do anything. And I watched and I thought, wow, that's actually really cool. So then I started once my wrist was better and have never looked back.
So you, Grace is that person that went to tryouts but actually couldn't try out.
Yeah. I was in a cast like, hiya, you're right.
It must have grabbed your attention though, the fact that you couldn't even do it and yet you still wanted to go back. Because for me, like throwing that first stunt was the reason why I stuck around. So It must have had that a really strong grip on you straight away to have just been sitting there watching.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, it's because I had all the wrong ideas of what cheerleading was. I thought there was going to be dancing, gymnastics and pom-poms, and instead the weights were the girls. And I was like, oh, that's actually really cool. And then, that's me.
So I started later than Grace. I started at uni. I had done gymnastics when I was younger. And so I actually had looked up a bit of cheerleading, and I'd actually found on YouTube sort of like the older routines of our cheer club, Leeds Celtics. But I was too scared to go to the comp tryouts, so I didn't go to the, I went and started on the match team, who do have pom-poms, cheer for basketball and American football. So I did that for a year. I did really enjoy it, but I'm a very cold person. So standing outside for 3 hours watching American football, not quite my thing. But we got to stunt only twice in the entire year. Like a coach came in and like taught us how to do some preps and stuff. And I loved it. And so then Grace always finds this funny because I'm not very good at dancing, but there was an opportunity to do the pomp team to get to go compete in that year that I didn't have time to go to. So I was like, I'm just going to do POM so I can see what comps are all about. Did POM for a short-lived March to June of one season. And wouldn't say I was great at it because I still take a while to pick up fly emotions things. And then the following season, tried out for comp once I'd like met a few people and I was a bit more confident. Because I still had some tumbles, I just like skipped to level 3, which was fun. But yeah, got to then kick off my all-star cheer career and haven't gone back to the match or form.
What was it like then going to that sort of first comp, doing the pom stuff? How did you find it?
It was great, but like the whole time I was just watching our like level 2 and our level 3 or 4, maybe might have been like our stunt teams. Like we obviously all supported each other. And I remember just watching them, was like, oh, I really want to do that. But woo, like POM. I think POM is amazing. Like I think it requires so much skill and I think it looks amazing when it's done. I'm just not very coordinated or good at picking up very fast, like things that are too similar. So it wasn't, and I love being in the air and like learning new stuff.
You both mentioned sort of how you describe what cheer is to people, but when you first became cheerleaders, what were the perceptions of sort of people around you? What were they saying? Because I know I had quite a difficult start in cheer. People at uni got it, but people outside of that just didn't get it, didn't understand it, or it was the sort of stereotypical, oh, you're only there to see girls in not many clothes and that sort of thing, which is so boring and I hate it. But sort of what were your perceptions when you first started?
Who do you cheer for? The classic question.
Yeah. I did have someone once say, they asked if I did any sports at university, and I said, Yeah, I do. I do cheerleading. And at this point, I was also on the like competitive like level three team, which I was really proud of. It was like my first year. And I was like, yeah, I do. I've come to cheer. And they were like, that's nice. But like any sports. And I was like, I remember just being like,
something like, don't you do something like netball?
And then they were like any sports, like teach. And I was just like, yeah, but I don't know if they mentioned like an example, but I was just like, it is. And that's right. And then it probably went into one of my long rambles. Like, it's just like, and we do this and we do this.
Yeah, for me, I think it's mainly just, who do you cheer for? Oh, ourselves. Oh, okay. It's probably the biggest one. To be honest, I think the person that gets most offended is my dad. My dad is like the biggest supporter of cheerleading. And I think he gets a bit offended when people ask him if I'm just around in a little skirt and bonbons. He's like, actually, it's very athletic. So yeah, I think it's just kind of breaking that stereotype of the girls before the football matches and the rugby matches. And my dad's earned a couple of the phrases. So now when we watch football or rugby games together and a cheerleader comes on, he goes, oh, they're definitely not level six. He's like, oh, I think they're level one, which they're not level one. Level one is a lot better than what they do.
Do you still get the same stereotypical perceptions now when you tell people that don't know you or what have you? Or do you think things have changed in the last few years with Bring It On, the cheer series on Netflix? Do you think it's a bit different now?
Yeah, definitely. I think lots of people have seen cheer, surprisingly a lot, actually. So that often, even just, you know, I went and got my hair cut recently and the woman said, oh, is that like that cheer documentary? Oh, I love this person and that person. And so, yeah, I think a lot more people have heard of it. So you can say, yeah, not quite as impressive as them, but yeah, you're on the right line. So I think it's definitely easier. And also there's a lot, it is getting a bigger sport. So people have heard of it more. And I remember when I had driving lessons, my driving teacher had another student that was a cheerleader. And then I'm pretty sure this is the reason I passed my driving test, was because my driving test instructor who ran my driving test, his daughter was, his niece was on Unity All Stars, which is one of the best in the UK. So he was bragging about how his niece is on Unity. I was like, yeah, they're a really great team. And he was saying, yeah, she really wants to be on Ruby one day. So I was just egging it on, saying how good they were. And then I passed. So yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and no, I agree as well. I think cheers what really helped, because even with Bring It On, they do throw people in the air, but they kind of do like a lot of the silly chanting, like back and forth at each other. We watched Bring It On. It was on in the background as we got ready at our last competition in Blackpool. And some of the, I say like the insulting back and forth there, I was like, I do not remember this in the film. I was like shocked straight to my hair, like, they're insulting each other in like with like in rhymes. So I think cheers definitely helped. I think though it's still, people still don't get like what kind of committed sport it is. Like I still get the questions like, oh, what, you have to go like tonight? Like from colleagues, if I'm injured, I'll be like, yeah, but I need to get back to it. I've got a comp in a week. Or like, and they're just like, what? They're like, but why? I'm like, well, you know.
Yeah, trying to tell people that you're doing essentially an amateur sport, but you have to go to training. You can't miss a training session. You have to go twice a week, three times a week. And they're like, but you're not professional. I'm like, yeah, but that's the sport. You can't miss a session.
Yeah,
that's that stereotype still annoys me, that you don't actually have to put effort in. It's like, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Can
I just miss a session? No.
Yeah, I just can't. I really always try and compare it. I can't think of another sport where it's like kind of so crucial in that every member is there, because it's just so difficult for us, especially as you actually get to a higher level, to find any old like main base to just come fill in, or a flat like. And if you're running the routine, you then don't want to swap the groups around. Whilst with other sports, you might have your best players, but you hopefully do have a line of reserves that you can put in, and it won't affect necessarily what everyone else is doing on the field or court.
How important is that for you as a flyer, Joe, sort of having a group underneath you or a person underneath you that you know, and then sort of, yeah, when people do have to switch in, how difficult is that for you? Because, you know, for us on the ground, we're throwing and catching, but it's easier to adapt. But I imagine as a flyer, it's a bit more difficult.
It's actually, I mean, the main thing is actually the heights of people. And I'm sure, like, as bases, you get like, I've got a very tall stunt group this season, which, and they're fab and love them. But like my main base is, I don't know, how tall's Elliot? Oh,
I don't know, 5'10".
That tall. And so not everyone can stunt in my group. Like, as you sometimes have shorter back spots and they'll be able to back like the shorter groups, but my group or side bases, like, it doesn't always work because they're like a taller group. And so sometimes you can, there are certain skills that you throw, and it is easier if you've got, like, traditionally you want a bit of a taller side to the main, ideally, so they can join, and you want the back spot to be the tallest person in the group, ideally. But not to, like, the coaches we have at LDC are really well trained. I feel like we've got a very safe, like, all the athletes we've put on teams, like, we believe they should be on those teams for a reason. Like, and hopefully people feel the same as me. There shouldn't be anyone on the team that, if you're put to stunt with them, it's a concern. So we're like, the team I'm on now, Revo, like, things swap around, and everyone is so good at just swapping around. Like, you can jump into any stunt group and we'll just do the elite sequences in that group. And it feels different. Everyone, like, flies differently. Everyone spins differently, or bases, even some is like pop TikTok slightly higher or lower. But yeah, I think it's, especially when you get to, if everyone has the same foundations, then I think it's less obvious. In the past, maybe at uni, or like where people don't have quite the same experience, or then, yeah, you can maybe notice it more. But hopefully if everyone's been kind of trained from the basics in September, October, then it's not really too obvious.
And what's that feeling of flying like, you know, either when you do it first time or now? What is it about flying that, yeah, sort of you notice in the air, and what keeps you doing it? Because it's I've done it and it's scary.
So I always say, like, I actually, it's so funny that people always, that's another question I'll get asked. I'll say, well, do you get thrown in the air? And I say yes. And they're like, isn't that so scary? And I'm always like, I am way more scared when I'm on the ground having to, like, even, because I'm very impressed with you guys, like, having someone, like, another human being coming and flying at your face, at your hands. I think it's like, I've done it to a much lower level, basing and backing. And it's, but whilst flying, like, there's you and there's three people that you'll trust, like, hope to catch you. And kind of back to those, like, basics, if you're scared and you don't trust the people beneath you, it's then not going to work. Like, you really need to be able to, like, go for the skills. And if you have a group that you know will, like, always catch you no matter what crazy stuff you do, which I'm lucky this season because I'm learning a lot of new skills this season, they always, like, catch you in the weirdest ways, touch wood, otherwise now a freak thing might happen. But, and then, yeah, there's actually no fear, really. I think to be a flyer, if you do, and I heard someone say this, we went to a training course earlier this year, and they were like, if that person is looking like they don't want to be in the air, put them on the ground. You need, anyone who's in the air needs to want to be in the air and cannot be scared. As soon as you have, and I'm quite tough on my flyers, so any flyers listening to this, like, I'll make them do, if they do any kind of like in the air burpees, because not safe for them, not safe for, like, people on the ground. So yeah, you have to kind of just be fearless. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. And, you know, lots of people want to be flyers. So if you don't prove that you want to be in the air, lots of space for you on the ground.
Can confirm Joey is harsh on her flyers as well.
Yeah.
From your perspective then, Grace, what is it like being a base and, you know, not just throwing the people in the air, but then having them coming back down to earth and having to catch them.
I love being a base. It's funny, you just have complete opposite instincts to a normal person's instincts, because a normal person, when something's flying at them, they tend to duck or run away. But our instinct now, after doing cheer for many years, is to get under it, which means my reflexes in general life are very good. I love it. I can't get enough of it. It's just, I don't know, it feels very good catching someone, saving their life, you know.
I think you have to be fearless as a base as well. To be a good base or back, you have to be willing to like put yourself under the ones that are the ones that go, oh no, and they take a step back. And so I think there is such a level of like, you have to be like fearless as well, being on the ground to be.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you have to put your flyer above you in terms of your needs and your injuries. And, you know, when people say, oh, is cheer a dangerous sport, they kind of always assume that it's the flyer that gets injured the most. I would argue that it's the people on the ground that get injured the most, because they're going underneath. As Joe said, if a flyer does something crazy, we still need to get under it and catch her flailing leg and arm. And, you know, I've broken my nose being punched in the face by a flyer because they've flailed their arms and I've still had to catch them. And, you know, if we don't catch them, then they're going to have a much worse injury. So,
yeah, that's why I'm so hard on my flyers. I'm like, if your people underneath you, you would not be happy if they just went like over and over again, kept dropping you. So, you know, sometimes I mean, we all have bad habits and we might accidentally once, but if someone like repeatedly keeps kicking their base in the face, I'm like, come on, you really need to try and fix this, because it wouldn't be acceptable if your base dropped you again and again and again on the floor. So,
Sportspiel is proud to be partners with the Mintridge Foundation, founded in 2015 by Managing Director Alex Wallace. The charity is dedicated to enhancing life skills in young people through sport. They provide a support network for young people by harnessing the power of sporting role models and have several wonderful ambassadors, many of whom have been guests on this show. The Mintridge Foundation assists young people of all ages, abilities and physical capabilities to develop confidence and resilience and create awareness of the importance of mental and physical well-being through sport. Another wonderful example of just how powerful sport can be to everyone. To find out more, go to mintridgefoundation.org.uk, or you can find a link in the episode show notes.
And how important, I guess, is something I learned from cheer, but how important is trust as well in trusting either those people below you or those people above you? And how does that, how have you found that, or has it impacted on your sort of day-to-day life as well? Because I just found myself sort of becoming a little bit more trusting of people just because I sort of had to learn how to trust people at cheer. I don't know if you found something similar to that or not.
For me, I've done cheer for such a long time. To be honest, I'm not sure that I've kind of had a life before cheer.
I can't really remember the contrast.
I've grown up essentially doing cheer. But yes, cheer is a huge mental game for everybody, particularly flying, I think. But it's a huge mental game. You have to trust everyone around you. You have to trust to be caught, and you have to trust yourself to catch, as well as you have to trust the other two or three people in your stunt group to catch the flyer. So yeah, huge amount of trust. But unfortunately, I've done it too long to compare.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually about in the external. I mean, because even mine, I always think like, oh, we only started at uni, but that's actually coming up to now like 10 years or something. So that's also a very, like, I'm getting older. I'm like, that actually isn't that like, so it is quite a huge chunk of my life as well. But yeah, I think it's just, there is just trust in the elements, not just when you're stunting, but also in your competitions, that in your coaches, like that your coaches are doing the right thing for the routine. And I think also, yeah, trusting yourself that you can do it, or believe it, as Grace said, it's a huge mental game, especially for a flyer. And I've been there before. And if you suddenly doubt that you shouldn't be in that routine, that or something, it's just gonna quick, like, go downhill fast. Like, you really need to, everyone needs to trust that everyone on the mat can do it, you can do it, and that, like, you've been put on that team for a reason. And I know loads of people have that, like, kind of self-confidence ups and downs throughout the season, but yeah, just need to believe you can do it.
As you've both been saying there, you sort of both been doing cheer for so long that you almost can't remember what it was like sort of not being a cheerleader, whereas I'm slightly different in that I've retired from the sport twice and I keep coming back. And I think for me, one of the things is the identity, like saying, sort of identifying myself as a cheerleader and that being my identity is quite an important thing to me. I'm just wondering if that's something that you also had pride in as well. Like, do you go around telling people that I'm Grace or I'm Joe and I'm a cheerleader sort of first and foremost, or is that not such an important thing for the two of you?
Yeah, 100%. I after uni, I was going to quit. I was done.
Yeah.
Joe made me come. At the time, non-tumble division wasn't a thing. And I can't tumble. And I've also not got very good jumps. So all I can give to a cheer team is my stunting ability. And I'm fine at dance. And our level three team at uni was just the best. It was the best team, the best vibes. It was such a great team, such great friendships. And we competed extremely well. We won grand champs at ICC. It was amazing. And I just thought, there is no way that I can beat this feeling, this team. And I won't get on a better team because I can't tumble or jump. So I was kind of saying, yeah, you know, hang my shoes up, as it were. And I hated it. And it lasted about 2 months. And Joe said, oh, come on, let's join a London team. So I said, fine. We did a couple of London teams and then we made LDC.
Yeah, that's it. I think Grace said that was definitely a high, that finishing that season. It was like a really special year because it was our two coaches. They were kind of retiring from cheer and they'd done Celtics themselves. Then they'd had this all-star program and they were moving back to us. So they knew it was their last season. And then sadly, like, one of the other coaches on the program died in a road accident. And so that whole last year, we were like, our music was back. We had this banner, which was actually very stressful because it kept getting tangled around. Like, we, like, stunted with the banner and, like, popped up this banner and it, like, rolled out and it often went wrong. But yeah, that the last competition we did was just like a near as much like routine that we could do. Like, it's still like, I watch it, it's like, gives you, like, it's like the best routine ever. And we got grand champs, we got these, like, fancy jackets. And so I was like, I cannot quit now. I've only done cheer for like 3 years. I was like, this is my up. So yeah, I dragged Grace around. As you said about the identity, back then I would often be like, I'm a cheerleader. Now, so I'd say it's so ingrained in my identity that my sister is often like, oh my God, every sentence you say, you're like, oh, I can't go to the pub because I have cheer. Or I'm like, oh, I got a new one because of cheer.
Yeah,
I think that's another thing people also we mentioned before, people don't realize as well, is that, again, we're competing at an amateur level, but you do have to sacrifice things in order to compete in the sport. And I think that's just another interesting point that people don't always get, like, oh yeah, you can come to this wedding. I'm like, no, I can't, I've got showcase that day.
Yeah, I had a Facebook notification of 12 years ago the other day. My stage said, Dad asked me to go on holiday when we have a competition, ... Wow, he just doesn't understand. And I sent it to our coaches and Brian, who just said, yeah, nothing's changed. Which is true. People really don't get that you can't just go on holiday when you have a competition or training. And me and Joe were talking about this the other day. I have a hen do weekend that I just have to leave early because we've got training on the Sunday. And, you know, you just make these sacrifices and sometimes it can be tough, but ultimately it's completely worth it because you love the sport and you need to be there for your team.
Yeah. I think also that's why we've brought it, like we've got the recreational teams, because we do understand like people's level of how much they want to commit or can commit, whether that be financially a job. So we've got like our rec teams of like slightly lower level, high level, and it's for exactly that. You can just drop in and out whenever you want. You can either pay on the door, you can pay on the door, you can pay like monthly. But so that's why then we do have the kind of expectation that if you're on a comp team or on a team where you've like promised to commit, then we kind of are, okay, well, you've chosen this for a reason. So
make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
You both mentioned LDC there, and I think it's a good time now to actually talk about how it was formed, because yeah, how do you go about saying I want to start a cheer club, and like how do you do that? Because I wouldn't know where to start.
Yes, a lot of time and effort.
I think also people now looking at it, so it's been 2.5 years since we like officially like launched publicly to the world. But it started as a lockdown project, like when we were in the first like big lockdown. So like March 2020. And we were kind of like, oh yeah, and I think people now say think we're like making it up a bit because we've got so big that we genuinely were like, let's make like a level 2, level 3 stunt group, maybe level 4 if we get like, and so we were literally aiming for like 16 people, not even necessarily. We had no mats. We were looking, we found a sports hall that could let us train for like an hour a week or 2 hours on like a, and they had like some PE mats. So we weren't even thinking like a full size one, even one team. We were like, maybe let's aim for stunt groups.
Weren't we? We were looking at a squash court to train in.
Yeah.
We needed 23 athletes to, that was our aim, 23 total.
And now, including rec. So we still wanted definitely to have a rec team. So we were like, we'll have a rec team and then we'll have like comp stunt groups. Mm. And then we were like quietly planning all this. We were so lucky. We had like loads of support from Bryony, Emma, then Riley and Connor, shout out to them who have now moved to Australia, but they, Connor built us like an amazing website. We started like planning our like social media. So it was kind of like in this little thing, and we just didn't expect what was going to happen. And then we kind of launched it publicly. And even for that, in the middle of COVID year, where no one could still stunt, just like 100 people came to the like free, come to our free first day. And we then did like 4 to 6 weeks of crash mat stunting, and it was socially distanced, and we only had like enough PE mats, like it was like 10, like 12 PE mats, but a team of 20. So people were having to do sit-ups on like a basketball court and things like that. Like we couldn't even give enough like equipment. And then we went into another lockdown. So our first season literally was, and then we went to lockdown, but that was the really long one from like December to April or something. So we refunded everyone, cancelled, and we were like, oh, see you on the other side. And then April, things started to open up, and then we were actually allowed to stunt. So sports outside, sanitizing your hands like every 10 minutes. There were all these weird rules. You had to stunt. You couldn't really change people, stunt groups either. Like, oh, you swap. So you had to be pretty sure that this group was going to at least work for that session. Every 15 minutes, had to sanitize your hands. I can't remember if we had to wear masks at any point. Then they told us not to wear, but there was really kind of strict rules you had to follow in order to be allowed to do it. Sportshire England, the government like body, did like such a great job to push for it, because this was when COVID was still, you had to eat outside everything, and trying to convince that it's really safe for people to be nose to nose with people outside of their households. So they did like amazing, got stunt again. We still couldn't really We had like two teams, but we couldn't do a showcase. We couldn't do, so we made little routines up. And then at the end of like June, that was our first season. So our first season was really weird. And then, yeah, last season was our first proper one, like from start to finish. And yeah, it was amazing. I don't know if Grace, you can take over covering some of the highlights. I've talked for all.
Well, yeah. So as Joe said, last season was our first competitive season. So we had three teams compete and all three teams did incredibly well. It was, yeah, I cried a lot at all the competitions. It was just hugely emotional. It had been such a roller coaster getting there. And seeing all of our really hard work pay off in such an incredible way. As we say, we needed 23 people and we got over 100 in our first competitive year. Insane. We've now got over 200 people. So yeah, it's been a big roller coaster. We won quite a few national champions last season. We won, well, both, sorry, I'm skipping your question, Will, but we'll tell you our highlights. So we won, I think it's both of our highlight really of LDC, but for different reasons. Our level three team at our BCA national championships, we won the level three division, but then we also won the grand champs of level three and four, and won a bid to the Bahamas. And yeah, I just bawled my eyes out, and I was filling in for that competition, so I was competing, and it was, I didn't think we were going to win, and then we won, and then we all went off the mat, you know, elated, and then suddenly they called out our name for this grand champs, and I just remember being like, what the hell, and just running back onto the mat with Elizabeth, the other coach, and we were just like, did they just say our name? Did they just say us? And because we heard royalty, but that's quite a common team name. So did they definitely say London Dynasty?
I think I'd already made it, but I was, I think, closer to the mat when I heard. I had this like hot medal on, and I like turned around, ran, the medal like hit me in the face. And then I ran up to the announcer person. I was like, you just said, like, what did you just say? And she was like, what? Like, and she like said a different team. She was like, and they were the ones, and I was like, no, the one before that. There was one before that. And she was like, London Dynasty. And I was like, because yeah, I think the division had been out of like the level three division until had been like level like five of us, maybe six of us. And we had thought that was going to be like really tough. So when we won, we were like, that's amazing. And then when they did this grand champs, it was out of like 15 or 16 teams. And for us, only second time ever competing as program. It was, yeah, amazing. Especially as, yeah, me and Elizabeth, Grace also coached her. We are like, we were really new to coaching last year, especially coaching an all-star team. So yeah, that was amazing. We do work with some amazing choreographers who do all like the fluff and like some really like fun stuff and sequences.
What do you think it is about LDC, and this is might be a hard question for you to answer, but what do you think it is about LDC that makes it so successful, and what, not just in terms of your performances as well, but I remember turning up to tryouts. I came to level 3-4 tryouts. I'd not cheered for 3 years. I remember turning up and thinking, there's no way I'm getting on any of these squads because the level of people here is so good. You had so many good people trying out and so much interest. What do you think it is that's made LDC so popular and so good?
I think, I mean, I always put it, the help we've got and like the supports are in like different ways. So Connor, who built our website, like as a starting point, he worked so hard, and this is like so hard to do in just months. He got us to the top of Google, so he's really good at like SEO stuff, and we would never have been. And he, and so it was like all everyone's like shared goal of trying to make it as successful as it can be. And I remember even he was giving us updates like, we're on number five now, we've hit number five. And like, he was just as passionate, like trying to achieve it. So, and now, yeah, if you, any kind of London cheer teams, London cheerleading, like we're number one. So that firstly, I mean, I think that's like the easiest thing. And then we've got some like amazing coaches. And from like, we've got Bryony, who she was on Unity Ruby. So she's like a really top level athlete as well. She's also coached years and years, got lots of it. So that's obviously been amazing. Like, we've been able to introduce high level teams. Like, we've got a level 5 development team. We've got a level 6 competing team now, thanks to that. But then even just all our other staff members, they, even if they're new to coaching, they're from different cheer backgrounds, so they can bring different things, where they cheered at uni or different programs. And again, like, they put in like 100%, so much extra time themselves as well. Like, we really don't micromanage the teams that much. So the coaches of every team do their own session plans, do their own like choreo stuff. And, you know, we obviously oversee, help if things are needed, but they really like put in so much time themselves outside of just being in those, in the gym, those 2 hours, which I'm not sure, like, hopefully all of their athletes realize that as well, because we do that. They are behind the scenes just all the time, watching videos for inspiration, planning, and it's not just about like standing there at the front of the mat and like for 2 hours.
Yeah, I think also to blow Joe's horn is our Instagram and social media. Joe is incredible at all social media things, and loads of people come to us that have found us from Instagram. So that's definitely a huge part of people kind of initially knowing who we are and finding us. It's the website, but it is hugely the Instagram, which is all thanks to Joe. And then I'd say just our friendship in general. I think we're the coaches and the staff, we're all really good friends with each other, and I think that shows. And we're all really good friends with the team, and I think that shows. And I think friendship is such a huge thing. We're an adults team, and I think, you know, obviously when you're in session you're the coach, and when you're an athlete you're an athlete, but ultimately we're all very good friends, and we really enjoy the friendships of everyone on the team. And as Joe said, all the coaches do different things. Lottie and Maya, who coach our level 1 team, they have individual one-to-ones with their team members. They have a different one or two people each week that they stay behind and get to learn about them on like a personal level. And they sit in the changing rooms after training and just have a chat and learn about their jobs and all this kind of thing. And it's just those little things that make people feel really special and actually kind of wanted, and, you know, have the actual level of friendship that we aspire to be. And I think it's something people really want, is an adults only program, not just an adults only team, but our entire program is adults only, which is very rare, if there are any at all, that are just adults only, no kids at all anywhere to be seen.
Anywhere on the property.
So it just means that we can do lots of cross team socials, and, you know, every social is adults only. And obviously it's not always about drinking and things like that, but it means that we just have that flexibility. We don't have to ask parents for permission, and everyone's roughly the same age, which means you've got the same point of interests and the same references. And obviously you've got some that are born in 2001, have never heard of Kim Possible, but that's about as extreme as you get.
Yeah, I think on the no kids thing, it also means that things that we don't organize, the whole team can just be invited. So even though it's not necessarily like about drinking, but like so many people will just be like, oh, I'm having a birthday at this place, you are all welcome. Whilst obviously when you've got a team that has 14-year-olds on, you then have to kind of then private message. Like, so whilst we kind of encourage like a really inclusive, like, everyone is invited to everything. I think one thing just to now to blow Grace's horn, because it jogged my memory when she said about social media. I think what's also worked so well is that me and Grace are good at really different things. So it kind of means all bases are covered. So Grace is, I'm very bad at maths, like as in really simple maths. I'll be there on my phone and I'm like, it's this, like, where? And Grace is like, no, it's not. and then, but yeah, I'm kind of like the social media is my thing, and also like I like writing, so website copy or kind of like email, like, so copywriting stuff I'll do, And then Grace, obviously in her like daytime job as well, can hook us up with the best social venues and deals. And so we've got like a really strong like social element as well that we can offer to people. And then, yeah, I think, I mean, to be honest, we do just go week to week, month to month, and just try our best.
Doing it, don't we?
And I think it is actually what you said about like mine, Lottie, the number that we aren't afraid to have like a really big staff team, in the sense that we want every team to be properly like covered by coaches. And so as we get bigger and bigger, it is like harder, but me and Grace try our best. It's harder on the rec teams as people join like on a weekly basis, but to know everyone's names like as much as we can. I'm pretty like we're covered on like the comp teams definitely, and a lot of the rec people, but the newer ones that join, because we do have tasters for Ascendance like 5 a week, so it's a little bit more difficult, but we still, and we always want it to be that we like do know and appreciate like every single person, and that it doesn't become like a bit of like no one knows anyone, which helps by having like 2 dedicated coaches or 3 to like each team.
If you want the latest Sportspiel episodes and updates direct into your email inbox, then subscribe to our newsletter. You can find a link to do so in the show notes of this episode.
When you were starting out initially, first thinking of setting up LDC, what was the, I guess, what was the reasoning for it? Because as we've mentioned, there are other clubs in and around London, some fairly well established. What was your thinking behind, right, I don't want to be part of these clubs anymore, I want to do my own thing? Sort of what was the reasons for that?
I think it was just, I mean, all the clubs in London are like great clubs, all have different things going for them. But I think we just wanted, like we always say, like our uni experience, especially for me, that was how I started Cheer, was such a special experience, that we kind of just wanted to take everything that we had, like the, our favorite things, say, whether it be, you know, socials, adults only, this level, like just having that more control. So we just kind of thought like, why not just, and at that time we actually just wanted to kind of make a social community and like our own friends and our own, it wasn't really at that point even about, oh, how many teams can we, as we said, introduce. It was just, oh, let's like get a group and just it be ours. And then it just kind of grew from there. But I think actually being on so many like on different programs, I also after Celtics was on their like sister Aviator All-Stars, it was then, who the coaches who coached Celtics, they had their All-Star program. So then I trained with them at a high level. And basically every program like I've trained with, like you learn something from them. And like for us, for instance, you'll know like the lift ups we do at the end of the session, we sadly we can't actually take credit for like making that up, but we did that at uni and at AV, where for anyone listening, we go around, anyone can put their hand up and say, and it is very cheesy, this is probably the most like cheesy cheer thing we do, but and say like something that someone's done well. It doesn't even have to be skill wise, but if they've just worked really hard, or you know, did a great motivating talk or whatever it might be. And we just think that like ends the session really positively. But that was taken from our uni team and the what they did there. So yeah, I was kind of just taking all the things we've learned from like different coaches, different like styles, and then just getting to make it our own.
Yeah, I'd just echo most, well, everything that Joe said. And for me, we just wanted an adults only program, and none of the teams we had been in London had been adults only in its entirety. And I think that was a huge thing for us for the social aspect. Being a Londoner, I know that so many people move to London from all over the place and don't really know anyone. So it's a great social thing to do as well. And yeah, we just wanted to replicate our last season in Celtics particularly, and just have that level of friendship and just knowing if you want to do something on your Saturday night, you can always find a cheerleader to do it with you.
Yeah. I will say the adults only thing, certainly for me, was a big draw because of my previous club, which I loved the people there, some really, really good people, I had a lot of fun. But I was, as a man in my mid-20s, flying 10 and 11-year-old girls. Yeah. And if I'm being honest, it can be awkward flying women of my own age anyway. the nature of like when catches go wrong and what have you. But yeah. When it's like a 10, 11-year-old girl, it's just never quite the same. And also, yeah, like you say, just the level of humour you can have around them, sort of the relationship you can have with them. Like, I mean, there are girls on our squad that are 22, 23, and I struggle to get most of their references. So for a 10-year-old, I've got no chance. But we'll start with Grace on this one, and then we'll go to Joe. But when you look back and see where LDC has gone in the last 2.5, 3 years, sort of how do you reflect on that? And did you ever think it would be as successful as it has been in such a short space of time?
No. It's insane. When I tell, you know, it's just been Christmas, so telling my family how Cheer's going, oh yeah, we've got over 200 people. And they've, didn't you just start in 2020? Yeah. Didn't you just compete for the first time last year? Yeah. Didn't you win? Yeah. Mad. Like, there's no way to be humble about it. It's mad. We've done insanely well. It's hard to not think of it as a fluke, but it's not a fluke. It's, as Joe said, it's all the help we've had. It's mine and Joe's hard work day in, day out. Every day there's cheer admin to do. Every day we do our day jobs, finish our day jobs and head straight to cheer. Sometimes we do cheer in the time of our day jobs. Hopefully my boss isn't listening. It's it's a lot of time, work and energy. And we are very, very grateful for everyone that's kind of trusted us and believed in us and our coaches. We've, as Joe has mentioned, we've got incredible coaches. We're extremely lucky for everything that we've got. But yeah, it's insane. And there is no way to not brag. We are incredible.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Grace has really covered off there, but I think also it's also the athletes who, from the very first ones, we've got OGs, originals still on the team now. And if it wasn't for them kind of putting their trust in, and they had no idea whether we'd be successful or not, posing for photos, posing, we've got like in our uniform for the first time, things like that, just like, showing that we had members. And even then, like, I remember it was like the summer of when we launched, and our Limitless chat, which, as you know, Naz, like the whole program has like 200 and something people in, but it had like 20 people in, and then we added like an extra 5, and a lot of it was people kind of suggesting it to their friend as well, and then they join. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to find that old chat. Like, loads of those people are still on the program now, which makes me really happy. But yeah, it's also, we couldn't have done it without those people even taking the steps in the first place to then helping us like grow.
A lot has happened in that 2.5 year period. Not wanting to obviously wish the time away or anything, but where would you like to see sort of LDC go in the next few years, and yeah, what would you like to achieve on and off the mat?
I have one, but Brian's probably gonna kill me for like jinxing it, but no, obviously we've got a team now that is eligible to get a world's bid. It's definitely not like our like one set goal and being that like for this season, because if it happened, it would be ridiculous to get a world's bid in our first ever time competing at that high level. But that's hopefully on the cards for us, like at some point. Like, we are eligible now, the comps we're going to, if we keep working hard, do a good job. Like, that's what I'd love to see. Like, that would be the dream, like us competing at Worlds.
Yeah, that is definitely the big goal. Our other goal is to get a sprung floor.
Yes, our own gym.
Our own gym would just be incredible. And unfortunately, it's very difficult in London. We want to keep the team as accessible as possible in terms of location. But even it's impossible to find a place to get a sprung floor in London. Most teams outside of London can access it if they have as many people as we do. We have choreographers come in from very established teams that don't have as many athletes as we do. In fact, some of them have half the amount of athletes we do. So it's not from lack of anything other than London has no space. So that
they do, but it costs some too much to be a warehouse in the middle of central London.
Well, that's it. We also want to keep our costs down. So it's finding that balance of keeping our costs as down as possible while trying to get the best facilities. We are on the lookout always for a sprung floor. So
if anyone knows anything,
warehouse, hit us up. But yeah, that's a huge goal for us. And also my other goal is to find some more high level coaches to join Bryony. So again, if you're a high level coach, if you've been to Worlds, come join us at LDC. We're the best.
I mean, if anyone's listened to this, and then I think that's I think you've sold the program very well. And I know I said that was my last question, but I've just thought of another one. What is it that keeps you coming back to cheer and keeps you doing it?
Friendships, definitely. It's very exciting. It's thrilling. It's I think having the team sport. I used to do I think I've stolen Joe's answer. I used to do ice skating. I was a figure skater and I used to compete on my own. And then when I started cheer as a team, I thought this is a lot better. It's much more fun to compete with other people and have that kind of camaraderie, whether you do well or whether you don't do well. You've got people to celebrate or drown your sorrows with. I think the friendships and the team element for me.
Yeah, no, Grace knows, as I always say it, but yeah, I was a very, very individual sport growing up. Don't know why. I did ice skating, not as long as Grace. I'm not very good now, and then horse riding and then gymnastics. So it was like all individual sports. I think it's for my lack of hand-eye coordination. Wasn't a fan of anything that required a ball being thrown at me. So doing something, so this is like my first real team sport that I've ever like done for longer than a couple months at the age of 11. It definitely that like team element, the friendships. And I think it's just like the sense of accomplishment as an athlete that you get, setting goals and getting new skills. Because I think, I mean, it's probably same with all sports, but it's just that you can never like win. You can never be finished with cheer. The level it goes to is ridiculous. Like some of the people, like if you look on Instagram and there's the people celebrating their new skills, they are such a high level, but there is always a skill to get. Like you're never like, oh no, I'm really good, like I'm done. Like there is, you can't ever really be done. You can never be like, oh, I've done it, I've finished cheer. Like,
yeah, love that. Thank you both so much for joining us today. I've loved learning a story. To be fair, I didn't really know the story of how ODC started, so I've definitely loved learning about that and chatting to both of you. And also, without wanting to blow smoke up your asses too much, thank you for setting up LDC. It's certainly given me a new lease of life. And yeah, if anyone's looking for a new cheer squad in and around London, or even just looking to get into the sport in the first place, wherever you are, just do it. It's so much fun. It's dangerous, but it's worth it.
That should be our new tagline. Dangerous, but worth it.
Once again, thank you to Joe and Grace for being such fantastic guests. And I think we can all agree that what they and everybody else at LDC has achieved in such a short space of time is phenomenal. I'm personally very, very excited for what the future has in store, starting with our first comp of the season for four of the five competitive teams this weekend. Thank you once again to everybody for tuning in, and please continue to spread the word and encourage everyone to subscribe to the podcast. You can find us on all of your usual podcast providers. Make sure to follow us as well on social media using the handle @sportspielpod, while you can also email us on sportspielpod@gmail.com. I'll be back next Tuesday with another fantastic episode, so make sure you keep your eyes and ears peeled for that one.